The headlines. The death toll from Israel's attacks on the Gaza Strip continues to rise as the regime carries out new airstrikes on the besieged territory. Hamas says Palestinians will not leave their homeland in a second Nakba after Israel issued an ultimatum. And also in our headlines, people hold rallies worldwide in support of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. The death toll from Israel's savage attacks on the Gaza Strip continues to rise as the regime carries out new strikes on the besieged Palestinian territory. Israel says it attacked 750 targets on Friday alone, including 12 high-rise buildings. According to Gaza's health ministry, nearly 1,800 Palestinians have been killed since the strikes began on Saturday. Around 800 are women and children. Thousands have been injured as well. More than 420,000 Gazans have been displaced. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says at least 13 Israelis and foreigners being held by the group have been killed in Israeli airstrikes as well. In the meantime, human rights groups have confirmed that the regime has used white phosphorus munitions in attacks on Gaza. The territory remains under Israel's complete siege with no access to electricity, water, food, and medicine. As a part of its Operation Al-Aqsa Flood against Israel, Hamas has been firing thousands of missiles into the occupied territories. The Palestinian resistance movement has now carried out the farthest launch since its military campaign began on Saturday. Palestinians say Ayash 250 was fired at Israel's northern command base in the city of Safed. Israeli media claim it was intercepted by the regime's missile system. Sirens were sounded all the way from settlements close to the Gaza Strip to cities such as Haifa. The missile has a range of 250 kilometers. Hamas had previously stated that it can target anywhere in the Israeli-occupied territory. So far, over 1,500 people have been killed and 3,400 injured in Operation Al-Aqsa Flood by the resistance group. Hamas says it launched the military campaign in response to repeated Israeli desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and the regime's crimes and aggression throughout the decades. Hamas says Palestinians will not leave their homeland in the second Nakba after Israel issued an ultimatum telling people in the north of Gaza to move south within 24 hours. The resistance group, in a statement, called on residents not to leave their homes. It said people in Gaza reject Israeli threats and will not repeat the Nakba, referring to the mass displacement of Palestinians back in 1948. Hamas said that Tel Aviv is seeking to get rid of the Palestinian people by killing and expelling them. Earlier on Friday, the Israeli military called on all residents in Gaza City to evacuate their homes and head south of the territory. The military warned that it will continue to operate significantly in the city in the following days. The Israeli army later dropped flyers on Gaza, warning residents to flee immediately to the south. We're now being joined by our correspondent, Mona Kandil, who's joining us from Ramallah, if I'm correct, to bring us up to speed on what's taking place in the occupied West Bank. Mona, welcome to the program. Earlier, when we were showing images of pro-Palestinian rallies taking place across the globe, we also saw some demonstrations which turned into street clashes in the occupied West Bank, also in the city of Ramallah. What can you share with us about what was taking place there?
Like what happened in Ramallah, people from all walks of life, thousands of Palestinians, marched towards the Israeli military checkpoint of Beit Il, northern Ramallah. A Palestinian, young Palestinians threw stones at the Israeli forces and burnt tires. The Israelis immediately used stun grenades and tear gas canisters in order to disperse the protesters. Then the Israelis used their fire, and it was use of excessive force. However, the Palestinians, a number of Palestinians had been wounded at the military checkpoint of Beit Eil. A number of them were seriously wounded, according to Palestinian paramedics. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, this day of anger, or the Friday of anger, led to the killing of 12 Palestinians across the occupied West Bank. 11 Palestinians were killed in the occupied West Bank, and one was killed in Al-Quds. In Taqwa, Beit Lahem, Beit Ula Al-Khalil, this village, Beit Ula Al-Khalil, in the city of Al-Khalil, Tammun, Tobas, Tulkarem, four Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces in Tulkarem. In Deir Bzia, this village near Ramallah, and Beit Furik, all those Palestinians were killed while taking part in the protests in support of the Gaza Strip and calling for Israel to immediately stop its massacres and the murder of the children. So it's another day where the Israelis are doing their utmost in order to force the people to quit resistance, to force the people not to take part in any of the protests and demonstrations, and not to express their opinion, to reject the crimes, the genocide being committed against the Palestinians. So since Saturday up till today, we are speaking about over 45 Palestinians had been killed in the occupied West Bank and in Al-Quds. Hundreds had been wounded with the continuation of the closure, and the Israeli forces are continuing to deploy at the military checkpoints all over the occupied West Bank.
Mona, before we leave you, how do Palestinians feel about this worldwide support that they're getting at this point?
The Palestinians know very well that the people around the world, whether the Islamic or the Arab world, people can do nothing but to take part in the protests and the rally, to continue mentioning and speaking about the people of the Gaza, as well as condemning the Israeli crimes and the killing of the children there. So Palestinians know that if it was possible for the people, the Islamic world and the Arab world, if they were able to come to Palestine and to fight with the Palestinian people, of course they will do. However, the Israelis are preventing Palestinians themselves to go to Gaza Strip, are preventing Palestinians themselves to enter to Al-Quds and to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. However, they are also calling on the Arab countries to allow their own people to freely take part in the protests, to express their opinion, to speak about the Gaza Strip, to condemn the crimes being committed by the Israelis, and not to silence them. At the same time, Palestinians today, during the rallies, they said they hope that the Arab countries who have direct talks and ties with the Israeli regime to stop these ties and relation, and to end any talks with the Israeli occupiers, because it's enough for some Arab countries stabbing the Palestinians in their backs.
Thanks a lot, Mona Kandil, joining us from Ramallah. Well, people across the globe have taken to the streets to condemn Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in Gaza. Nationwide rallies held in Iran were held, rather, in a show of support for people in the besieged territory. Protesters burned U.S. and Israeli flags. The Yemeni city of Sana'a was also the scene of a massive demonstration. Participants chanted slogans in condemnation of Israeli crimes. They called on the international community to take action and stop Israeli crimes. People in the Iraqi capital Baghdad also marched in Tahrir Square to slam the Israeli crimes in the occupied territories. They hailed the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, launched by Hamas resistance movement. Similar rallies have been held in Jordan and even in Sri Lanka. Our correspondent in Tehran, Gisumi Shamadi, tells us more about the anti-Israeli demonstration in the Iranian capital.
There are immense crowds right now on the streets in the capital, Tehran. All of them have come out to express their support for the Palestinians fighting for their freedom. They want their voices to be heard. It is interesting, Danny, to see so many younger people here. I've talked to children as young as 7 or 8 years old who are quite aware of the situation there, and they want to offer the support to Palestinian kids. And I've also managed to talk to a large number of people who believe that because they want to have their voices heard, they need to say this in English, just because they know that their voices will be muffled by mainstream media. So right now I have with me one of these people, a young woman who is with me, a mother of two, who has come out today with her family to show her support. So tell us, what brings you here?
I've come here with my husband and my two little kids to support women in Palestine, to support kids under the rebels, and we are here to say that you are not alone, sisters.
Okay, and what is the message that you want to send to these mothers and kids?
Yeah, ladies, you are not alone, and we support you here. As our Supreme Leader has quoted that Zionism will not see 25 years later. So we are here to say that we are stand by you until the end.
Thank you very much. There's also an older gentleman who is here with us who also wants to send his message to the international community. So, sir, tell us, why are you here?
My name is Azizullah Khawand. We have participated in this demonstration in order to say that Palestine, Yemen, Syria are not alone. The Israel is a gland of cancer. It must be eradicated from the all of the world. Therefore, Israel, America are oppressor, and Yemen, Palestine, Syria is oppressed.
The Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, says Israel is now weaker than ever, while resistance groups fighting the regime are becoming stronger day by day. The Hezbollah deputy chief says the future is for Palestinians and the Israeli occupation will soon end. Sheikh Naim Qassem said Israel is hiding behind its war machine. He stressed that Tel Aviv's organized crimes against the Palestinians in Gaza are supported by the U.S. The senior Hezbollah official criticized international silence on Israel's massacre of the Palestinian people, including children in Gaza. Naim Qassem said those who are silent are actually partners in the Israeli aggression. He said that Hezbollah will not become intimidated by U.S. warships being sent to the region. Naim Qassem noted that the Lebanese resistance movement is fully prepared and will join Palestinians' operation Al-Aqsa Flood when the time comes. Iran's foreign minister has criticized the U.S. for supporting Israel in its unrelenting assaults against the besieged Gaza Strip.
The U.S. has called on all parties to exercise restraint, expressing worries about the spread of the war. But it's ridiculous that the U.S. is urging restraint while it's giving a free hand to the war criminals of the fake Israeli regime and Benjamin Netanyahu to kill Palestinian civilians, including women and children, in Gaza.
Amir Abdullahian said Washington cannot send weapons and bombs to Israel and at the same time call for restraint. The Iranian foreign minister was speaking at a joint presser with his Lebanese counterpart Abdullah Bouhabib in Beirut. Amir Abdullahian said Israel must end its war crimes against the Palestinian people as well as its inhumane blockade of the Gaza Strip. He added that anything is possible if Israel does not stop its war crimes. The top Iranian diplomat invited all Islamic states to call for an end to Israel's crimes and its siege on the Gaza Strip. Bouhabib, for his part, urged international pressure on Israel to stop its onslaught on the Gaza Strip. The Lebanese foreign minister said the continuation of tensions threatens regional security. Now, from the Lebanese capital, Beirut, if I'm correct, this is happening in southwestern Beirut as the pro-Palestinian demonstrations are continuing across the globe in support of the Palestinian cause, in support of Gazans who have been suffering as a result of the 7-day indiscriminate aerial strikes on the Gaza Strip being carried out by the Israeli regime So far, the Israeli attacks have killed at least 1,800 people, including scores of women and children, leaving more than 7,000 injured. Close to 400,000 people have been displaced internally. Nearly 600 of those killed up until now have been reportedly innocent children. Women and elderly are also among the fatalities and casualties of the asymmetrical aerial attacks that are being carried out against the defenseless people of Gaza. Well, global condemnation appears certain to follow France's new ban on all pro-Palestinian protests. Thousands of activists turned out in Paris anyway to stand up for besieged Gaza and were met with the typical brutality which has made French police infamous. Rami Mazari has more from Paris.
In Paris, thousands of people protested despite a new nationwide ban on all pro-Palestinian demonstrations, which appears certain to cause global condemnation. While a pro-Israel protest in Paris was immediately approved on Monday, pro-Palestinian protests always require 3 days of waiting, which many in France have often found unfair. On Thursday, the permit was applied for, but the Interior Minister refused to issue a protest permit and instead declared his blanket ban, which was then approved by the judicial branch.
It's been 6 years of dictatorship under Macron. We don't have the right to freedom of assembly. We don't have the right to defend the oppressed. And we don't have the right to remind the world that France is among those who are persecuting Palestinians the very most.
The government alleged that pro-Palestinian demonstrations were a threat to public order, which many found inaccurate, biased, and insulting. In 2014, France became the first country ever to ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations, which were in response to Israel's latest invasion of Gaza, which caused more than 13,000 casualties, the vast majority of them civilians. France's pro-Palestinian demonstrators repeatedly defied the ban, leading to police brutality and even more global condemnation. France continually holds itself up as a beacon of human rights, but from the yellow vests to Palestine to anti-austerity resistance, many say the government and media collude to deny an honest picture of French public opinion and even fundamental human freedoms.
The media refuses to talk about the children and families who are being massacred right now by the inhuman bombing in Gaza. We are making an appeal to President Macron right now to stop. It's your job to demand the peace which the French people insist upon.
As soon as the sun went down, French riot police unleashed water cannons, batons, tear gas, and arrests. Tear gas was launched indiscriminately at children and old people, as is common at French protesters, and which routinely goes without condemnation or even notice from Western commentators. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the Limelight.
In Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has achieved no positive conference bounce after trying to relaunch the Tory party as the party of change at their annual gathering in Manchester recently. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has reported on this story and tells us more. Polling found the United Kingdom's working class people, who were a key part of the coalition of voters that delivered the Conservatives' 2019 general election win, have been deserting the party in droves under Rishi Sunak's leadership. According to a research release by YouGov, as Keir Starmer prepares to make what will probably be his last pitch for support at a Labour conference before a general election, only 44% of the British working class voters who voted for the Tories in 2019 say they will back the party next time round. A report released by the centre-left think tank, the Progressive Policy Institute, which commissioned the findings, said Labour Party's lead was much narrower with working class voters than the wider electorate, and urged Keir Starmer's party to redouble its effort to woo them. According to the report authored by Claire Ainslie, a former policy director to Keir Starmer, this would include placing a relentless focus on raising wages for those on low to middle income and opening up housing to younger people. According to the report Roadmap to Hope, How to Bring Hope Back to Working Class Voters in an Age of Insecurity, other action Keir Starmer's party could take would be around restoring a basic sense of fairness after events such as Partygate. It states government should not be afraid to tax excess profits where companies are not passing the benefit on to consumers, and make sure the UK taxes are paid in full. The accompanying survey results, based on YouGov polling of more than 2,000 adults in September, gave Labour Party a 6 percentage point lead among working class voters, a narrower margin than the 15 percentage point lead the party enjoys among all voters in opinion polls. Although the Conservatives won a majority of working class voters at the last election, only 44% of those who voted for the party when it was led by Boris Johnson in 2019 now say they will vote for it next time round. About 12% say they would support Reform UK. 9% say they will vote for Labour, but a large proportion, 21%, say they do not know how they will vote. Claire Ainslie, the director of the Progressive Policy Institute's project on centre-left renewal, said the Labour Party was on course to win over working-class voters who were feeling pessimistic about the future. She said the task for Labour is to inspire hope and belief that the deal can be remade, whereby if you work hard, you get on. She added that rests on offering concrete plans to improve people's security and their prospects, and restore a sense of basic fairness to the economy and to society. The polling comes before a big battle by the Conservatives and Labour for working class support, with the Tories seeking to leverage concerns about culture wars issues and immigration. However, economic concerns and policies such as controlling energy bills and inflation were found to be more important to working class voters than cultural issues, which the report said had gained disproportionate media attention. But on grounds where the Tories were seeming to exploit, working class voters were more negative than positive on the effects of immigration. However, as net zero becomes increasingly central as a battleground, other findings around attitudes towards the climate crisis showed there was an awareness of it across all social groups, with more working class voters saying the government is not doing enough or spending enough to try to reduce carbon emissions. That is 34%. At the same time, there were stark signs that Rishi Sunak's recent pivot away from green policies and tactics such as campaigning around London's ULEZ driving charge could find more widespread traction. A total of 53% of working class voters agree that it is important to combat the climate emergency, but people should not be paying the cost of policies to reduce global carbon emissions. In findings that may hearten the Labour Party, which has sought to remind the public of Rishi Sunak's wealth, 74% of those polled describe the party he leads as not close to working class people, strongly associating them with wealthy individuals and big business. The PPI's report notes that Labour's working class vote has been declining since the early 2000s, even if that decline was only really brought into sharp relief with the fall of the party's red wall of constituencies in the north of England in 2019. Referring to the economic turbulence of recent years, it argues that the sense of insecurity, not knowing what the future holds, now seems semi-permanent. It found working class voters believed almost everything was going to get worse, including on all of Rishi Sunak's five pledges, presenting an opportunity for the Labour Party to provide reassurance to the voters. The British Herald has also covered the same story and tells us more. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has achieved no positive conference bounce after trying to relaunch the Tory party as the party of change at their annual gathering in Manchester recently. Instead, Labour, ahead of their gathering in Liverpool, which starts this weekend, is up 3 percentage points since last weekend and now stands on 42%. Stretching its lead to 13 percentage points. Despite all the coverage of Rishi Sunak and the Tories, the latest opinion poll shows the Conservatives unchanged on 29%. The Liberal Democrats are down 1 percentage point on 11%, while the Greens and Reform are both down 1 percentage point on 6%. Tory strategists hoped the conference would mark the moment when Rishi Sunak would start to close the gap on Keir Starmer and the Labour Party. The result suggests Sunak's gamble of opting for a combination of eye-catching new policies and dramatic U-turns has not worked in the way that he hoped. In Manchester, Rishi Sunak tried to present himself as the leader strong enough to take long-term decisions in the national interest, even if they were unpopular. They included ditching the Birmingham to Manchester leg of the HS2 high-speed rail line, launching plans to abolish A-levels in favour of a new system in which pupils would have to study English and mathematics to 18, and moves to ban young people from smoking. Keir Starmer's Labour Party is seen as far more united than the Conservatives. Some 47% of voters think Labour is united, and just 29% think it is divided. The Tories, on the other hand, are seen as divided by 50% of the voters, and are seen as united by just 30% of the voters. Although Keir Starmer is often criticised, even by some of his own MPs, for lacking detailed policies, he comes out better in the opinion poll than Rishi Sunak on the question of policy. Some 48% think the Tories have poorly thought out policies, compared with 38% who say the same thing about Labour. Some 52% of voters expect Labour to be the largest political party at the next general election, against 26% who believe the Tories will be.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
My dear brothers and sisters in Iman, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As we have been going through the theme of living the pure life, or living the life that Islam has envisioned us to live, we got to a point yesterday where we looked at the topic of community building. We want to move on from that point of last night and go on to our next discussion this evening. We've established a community, we have a center, we have programs, we have events, we have scholars that are with us on a regular basis. But what happens when that community is taken away from you? What happens when that community is literally stripped from under our feet overnight? You'll recall back in March of 2020, things were running pretty smooth at, 2019, 2020 rolled along, January, February, things were pretty good in the world. And then March came along and we were introduced to a new concept, a global pandemic, right? Something happened in some part of the world. This pandemic began to spread from country to country. People were dying. People were being hospitalized in mass numbers. Our healthcare systems were not equipped. Our society was not ready to deal with a mass pandemic. This is something which had not been seen for at least 300 years at that scale. And these communities that we have been building for the last 30, 40 years, immediately overnight, they were completely destroyed. They were decimated. The centers were locked. We had nowhere to go for our religious zeal, for our religious thirst. We were really left as orphans in a way. But at one level, reflecting on what we've been talking about over the last few nights, that as believers, if we were fully convinced and had conviction in Tawheed, in that oneness of God that we talked about in the second night, these kinds of things would not have fazed us, right? We wouldn't have become bewildered. We wouldn't have become lost in what to do in terms of religion and spirituality. Because we know for a fact that religion, and Islam in particular, religion is there to give us hope, to give us backing, to give us that support when times are difficult. So the question I want to ask in the next few moments and try and answer is, what is the proper procedure to ensure our piety in a time of a pandemic? Right? What can we do? Because we're still, technically speaking, living within COVID. It hasn't completely been eradicated, and some of these experts say that we may never come to a point where it is completely removed, that it will always be with us. Today, obviously, the centers are for the most part open. We don't have a lot of the limitations and restrictions, at least here we don't in this center, that other communities are still imposing on their community members. But how do we live within this time of a pandemic and maybe what will come in the future? Because we don't know what will happen in the future. If you look at some of the hadith that talk about the Akhir Zaman, the latter days, the end of times, before the return of the Imam. And nobody knows when the 12th Imam will make his return. Many people like to say it's imminent, it's coming soon. But the reality is we don't know when the Imam will make his return. I remember when major events had been happening in the world over the last 20 years, people would open up the books of hadith and they would find these traditions that give some of the socio-political, economic, religious things that will be happening in the world, and they would begin to kind of enumerate them. There's a very actually beautiful hadith that comes to us from Salman al-Muhammadi, if I'm not mistaken, where he basically was on the Hajj with Rasulullah, the farewell Hajj, the Hajjatul Wida. And the hadith mentions, just in brief, that as people are doing tawaf of the Kaaba, the Prophet of Allah is hanging on to the black cloth of the Kaaba, the Kiswa. And Salman sees him, and the Prophet is crying. And Salman, being the man that he was, he went to the Messenger of Allah and he asked him, what's the situation, what's wrong? And the Prophet wanted to give him some information or give somebody the information. And fortunately, Salman was the man to get the information. And so the Prophet asked Salman if he wanted to know the signs before the end of times. And it's a lengthy hadith. There's probably about 60 to 80 things the Prophet enumerated. What would be happening? You know, the social climate of the world, things, for example, that like we see today where same-sex relationships have become common in society. Yes, this has been there since the days of Prophet Lut, alayhi salam. You can read the stories in the Quran, but at the level that it is today, where it is now legalized, it is now a part of the system, it is being taught in our elementary schools even, that this was probably never there in the early days. And so the Prophet went down enumerating sign after sign. What would be happening within the social climate of the world? What would the political climate be? What would the economic situation be? What would the religiosity of the people be at? Right. Some things that the Prophet mentioned in the tradition that really for his time 1400 years ago could not have been even thought of, I would say. But he was enumerating them. And this shows us the miracle that the Prophet was, that he was saying things that people couldn't even imagine would be a reality, maybe even scientific or breakthroughs in the world that he foretold that are coming true today. So anyways, my point being is that there will be a lot more struggle and challenges and difficulties that humanity will go through before the return and the eventual success of the Imam. In fact, some hadith even point to us to say that 1/3 of the population of earth, that's like 3 billion people today, will be killed by wars. Right? And you look at what's happening in the Middle East, you look at what's happening between Russia and Ukraine and other parts of the world, and the way that wars are going on, and sometimes countries are not even able to, you know, stop another country from imposing a war. And you think, well, how is that possible for that many people to die? But you see the way that we are digressing day by day, and it's very well possible. The same hadith says 1/3 of humanity will be killed by what they call like a virus or some kind of a sickness. Again, people will say, well, how could that many people die from a virus or an airborne or some kind of illness? And again, you look at whether it's the Spanish flu from 400, 500 years ago, to SARS, to HIV, to COVID, to whatever comes up in the future, the various strains, it's not difficult to believe that these kinds of hadith, obviously we believe them to be real, but it's not difficult to believe the actual implementation of these because we see examples of them in a minute way in our lives, and that if the hadith are telling us these things that we believe in, then obviously this means that this will become a very strong possibility or probability or reality in the future.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Ali حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن المؤمنين
صل
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight. According to a study from a Michigan-based research firm, an ongoing strike carried out by tens of thousands of auto workers has cost the U.S. economy billions of dollars, denying workers their wages and cutting output at car manufacturing facilities. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. France Press, AFP, has covered this story and tells us more. The United Auto Workers announced employees at United States automaker Mack Trucks voted down a labor agreement on Sunday, 8th of October, and will join some 25,000 other union members on strike. The union posted on social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, "The United Auto Workers members at Mack Trucks have voted to reject the tentative agreement and will strike in the coming days." The Post said this will impact 4,000 employees at Mack, a maker of industrial vehicles, which is headquartered in North Carolina, but has manufacturing facilities in Pennsylvania and Maryland. The United Auto Workers president, Sean Fain, said, "I'm inspired to see United Auto Worker members at Mack holding out for a better deal and ready to stand up and walk off the job to win it." The Mack workers will be joining striking United Auto Workers members at the so-called Big Three, General Motors, Ford and Stellantis, who launched a targeted action on 15th of September after failing to reach a new deal. The targeted strike called for stoppages at a handful of plants, whilst leaving most of the union's 146,000 hourly auto workers on the job. After 2 weeks of expanding the strike to other plants, Sean Fain on Friday, 6th of October, said the United Auto Workers will hold off for now, claiming last-minute progress in talks. With the dual earlier expansions of the strike on the prior two Fridays, the total number of workers on strike at the Big Three stands at about 25,000. The industrial action is the first ever joint strike at the three major automakers in a push for higher salaries and other improvements, especially relating to transition to the manufacture of electric vehicles. In a letter to Mac posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, the United Auto Workers cited wage increases, cost of living adjustments, and several benefits as outstanding issues in their contract negotiations. CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Detroit's Big Three automakers are furloughing or laying off thousands of non-union employees amid a bitter standoff with striking members of the United Auto Workers. Ford Motor recently furloughed 330 workers in Chicago and Lima, Ohio, adding to the 600 workers the automakers laid off last month at an assembly plant in Wayne, Michigan. General Motors, GM, which on Tuesday, 4th of October, reported a 21% increase in sales for its third quarter earnings, has laid off more than 2,100 workers across four states. Stellantis, the parent company of Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep and Ram, has idled nearly 370 workers, including 68 workers in Perrysburg, Ohio. The United Auto Workers on 29th of September expanded its nearly three-week-old strike to target GM's Lansing Delta Township assembly plant in Delta, Michigan, which manufactures the Chevrolet Traverse, the Buick Enclave. Ford workers at the Chicago plant make the Explorer and the Lincoln Aviator. Automakers say the furloughs and layoffs are a result of the United Auto Workers strike, which has now entered its fourth week. In a recent statement to CBS News that confirmed the furloughs, General Motors said, "It is unfortunate that the United Auto Workers' decision to call a strike at GM Lansing Delta Township Assembly Plant continues to have negative ripple effects. The impacted team members are not expected to return until the strike has been resolved. Since we're working under an expired labor agreement, there are no provisions for company-provided subpay in this circumstance." The automakers also said that a lengthy strike will lead to more layoffs for people who work at auto parts suppliers. Liz Dorr, Ford's chief supply chain officer, said recently, "We understand to date there are about 2,400 supplier employees that have been laid off," adding that if the strike is prolonged, there could be anywhere between 325,000 to 500,000 employees that could be laid off. The United Auto Workers has criticized the automakers' move to lay people off, with the union chief Sean Fain saying last month that the Big Three automakers are using their layoffs as a tactic to put the squeeze on our members. The United Auto Workers launched a coordinated strike last month, with nearly 13,000 auto workers walking off their job at the Big Three assembly plants in Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio. The website of ABC News has also covered this story and tells us more. According to a study from a Michigan-based research firm, an ongoing strike carried out by tens of thousands of automakers has cost the U.S. economy billions of dollars, denying workers their wages and cutting output at car companies. Over its first 2 weeks, the strike cost workers $325 million in lost wages, whilst imposing more than $1 billion in manufacturing declines at the Big Three U.S. automakers, General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis. Stellantis owns Jeep and Chrysler. The report said, accounting for additional costs to suppliers, dealers and consumers, the strike caused a total of nearly $4 billion in economic losses over its first 2 weeks. The work stoppages has grown steadily since its launch last month. After the strike began, Ford laid off 600 workers who assembled cars at a plant in Michigan on the same day. A company spokesperson told ABC News, workers in the paint department at the nearby plant are out on strike, leaving the assembly workers without adequate parts since the parts require paint before they can be put together into cars. A week later, approximately 5,625 additional United Auto Workers members and 38 car parts suppliers walked off their job. The union has carried out what it has called a stand-up strike, announcing a new set of strike targets shortly before thousands of additional workers are set to walk off their jobs. Anderson Economic Group CEO Patrick Anderson said in a statement, suppliers were particularly hard hit by the United Auto Workers strategy of announcing specific plants to be struck just hours before they were shut down. The shutdown of 38 parts distribution centers also crimped dealership service operations and, of course, caused more United Auto Workers to lose their wages.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseini on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. What I would like to say is that the event of the Sacred Defense is a prominent, important period in our country's history. Many wars take place in the world. There are border wars which aim to seize lands. However, a war that targets the identity of a nation, all a country has, and the achievements that a nation has gained with its sacrifices, such as the Islamic Revolution, is different from those wars. This event is different from those events. So what was defended were these basic important points. The issue was not only about a part of the border being moved back or being pushed forward, or about changes in a geographical borders. Of course, even if that were the case, that would still be important. But the importance of this cannot be compared to that. So this was about what was being defended, the issue of defense.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Now let's consider the second angle, which is the question of who were the aggressors. If we look at the matter from this perspective, the greatness and importance of the sacred defense will become clear. There are times when a country attacks another country, or at times an alliance of two or three governments or two or three powers attack a place. But there are times when the entire world attacks a country. This was the case. I am not exaggerating about this. And when I say the entire world, I am not referring to some remote country that has no influence on what is taking place in the world. All of the world's important powers back then formed a common front and contributed to the attack that was launched on us, on the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution. The US contributed in one way, various countries in Europe contributed in another way, and the Eastern Bloc, which was led on that time by the Soviet Union back then, contributed in their own way to this attack. It was said that the Americans were the main instigators behind the attack on Iran. Now, of course, documents have been published about this. I have not seen or carried out any research in this field, but that is what was said. It was widely talked about that the US was the main instigator behind Saddam's war on Iran.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.